Mason.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. You're not going to hear me much tonight. The Seahawks are on bye, so I don't have a whole lot to say. I'm, though, going to introduce Josh. He's the Lions super fan. He's pulling some double duty, recapping his team, plus doing a whole mess of hosting. Him and some of the other super fans stepping in to do that. We'll start off with Josh. He's going to be the one recapping the Sunday night game.
It is me. I'm Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan, and I'll be handling the recap for our Sunday night football game, which was the New York Giants going to Mile High Denver Broncos. The Broncos shockingly fall to 3-2 at the hands of the Giants by a final score of 23-10. And I don't think most people thought that the Giants would get their first win of the year going on the road in altitude. With four receivers going out, basically three of the four receivers from last week being injured, all with increasingly severe ankle and foot injuries. And the ragtag crew of Evan Ingram, Rashard Lewis, and Orleans Darkwa, Tavares King, and Jarrell Adams pretty much got it done today. And the real story here was Orleans Darkwa just gashing the Broncos, who came into the game averaging about 50 yards given up on the ground. And Orleans Darkwa found a way to get it done, continually just kind of being patient and, you know, holding true to the plays. He did have, you know, about half those yards, about 47 of them came on a long scamper. But he really was the story of the game, constantly getting the Giants out of bad field position and essentially flipping the field, much like that of a punter, but doing so on offense. So just not a whole lot coming from Eli Manning. He was fairly efficient, not really, only 128 yards. But Trevor Siemian, he actually left the game and did come back to finish the game, but he definitely took his licks, put up pretty respectable yardage, 376 yards, but did throw a couple of picks, and one of those being returned all the way for a touchdown in the second quarter by Janoris Jenkins, who was called for a couple pass interference penalties during the game. But for the most part, pretty much, you know, held Emmanuel Sanders in check. The big producers, though, for the Broncos were Demaryius Thomas with double-digit receptions, 10 catches for 133 yards. He was huge. He also was banged up. He was limping around pretty noticeably. And Devontae Booker had a couple of garbage time receptions and ended up getting 78 yards in receiving yardage, believe it or not. So pretty poor day for CJ Anderson and Jamaal Charles. They both struggled and couldn't even get to the 20-yard mark. But again, not like most people thought this game would go. Just really bad game out of the gate for Denver. And New York capitalized when given a chance. Ben McAdoo did not call plays for the first time since becoming head coach. And I would say that that was probably a very positive thing for the Giants and something they can look forward to going forward. Although the season not off to the best start. We'll see how it goes, but the Giants again do get their first win, and they are now sitting at 1-5 going into week 6, as the Broncos, who came off the bye last week, are now at 3-2. And again, that was final score of 23-10, New York over Denver. And we will move along to the rest of the game recaps.
This is Tom, your Bears representative here at Next Fan Up, and I'm here with Don, our Ravens fan, and he and I are going to very quickly review the really kind of ugly Bears-Ravens game this afternoon. How are you doing, Don?
Well, Tom, as we talked about, I've been better. Ended up being an exciting end to the game, but just like you said, yeah, very, very ugly game all around today.
Yeah, you know, Baltimore is doing some of the same things, but the Bears have been a really ugly team to watch so far this year. Not much in the way of offense, and really in the habit of making some major boneheaded mistakes. And today was really no different, with some special teams errors that were really inexcusable. Baltimore clearly outplayed them in that respect. And I won't say it was a turnover-filled game, but the turnovers certainly played a major role. Penalties played a major role. It was pretty ugly out there.
Yeah, I mean, last week and this week, considering, I mean, I like what I see out of Mitchell Trubisky. I think you guys have a bright future with him. I mean, he had some, you know, sacks he shouldn't have had. You know, he had the sack fumble. But watching Mike Glennon for those first couple games, I mean, it's a night and day difference. What impressed me, I guess, most about Chicago is they used the recipe from the Steelers when the Steelers were in town 2 weeks ago. Ran, you know, especially those outside runs. I mean, the Ravens had a couple deep stops on some of those outside runs, you know, 5 or 7 yard losses. But man, they just kept at it. And that is the weakness right now, the Ravens defense, without, you know, Brandon Williams, without Brent Urban on the defensive line. It's just pretty big gashed all around. And that obviously showed in overtime too with that big Jordan Howard run. Go ahead.
Yeah, they attacked. What really surprised me, you brought up the outside runs. You know, your defensive line, your front seven, was getting good penetration on a lot of those runs. But where the Bears had success, it surprised me, maybe it shouldn't have, was up the middle. And I think they really miss Williams a lot in that respect. The Bears,
absolutely.
The interior of their offensive line is pretty healthy right now, and it's pretty good with Josh Sitton and Cody Whitehair and Kyle Long. And I think that was what surprised me. They were fairly successful attacking the middle of that defense, which was otherwise excellent. The defensive backfield's, you know, really, really good, and the Bears have no wide receivers. I think their wide receivers had like 2 catches today. They were big catches, but still, you know, it was quite a performance otherwise by your defense. But I think they're a little weak in that front seven. I think they miss Williams a lot. I hope he's back next week for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, he has some rumblings on Twitter that he's coming back soon. But, I mean, they have the exact same recipe to beat Pittsburgh when you guys beat Pittsburgh. It's just he had 1 wide receiver catch for 4 yards. But, I mean, just run. I mean, you know, Jordan Howard is – I mean, I thought sort of some concerns with him coming in this year that it might be like a one-year thing. But, man, he's turned it around. I mean, you know, Tariq Cohen gives him a nice change of pace. I mean, as far as the Ravens go – you know, I've watched the Ravens for a long, long time. I've seen some pitiful offenses. And I know there's injuries, and I know there's all that stuff, but, man, they just can't get out of their own way. I mean, they got to overtime and had no offensive touchdowns, which they're sort of lucky to have gotten that far. But, man, I mean,
it looked to me like they really wanted to run the ball on the Bears, and they didn't do a terribly bad job, but I was surprised that they didn't pass the ball better. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, no, you're exactly right. I mean, Alex Collins and Buck Allen are good backs. I mean, good backs. I like them. They just don't get enough work, especially Collins. I mean, Collins can really bust off those, you know, big explosive runs, and he doesn't get enough carries, as far as I'm concerned. If considering, you know, coming into the game, they had Macklin out with a shoulder, and they had, you know, Perriman had, you know, they cashed in, he got blown up, and, you know, went with the pick. They have no one at receiver. I mean, this is the first game I can remember where Flacco has multiple interceptions, and I can't blame him for any of them. I mean, they're both drop passes from receivers. I mean, good passes. But, man, I don't know where – this is, quote-unquote, their easy stretch of the season. I don't see a whole lot of victories coming up for the Ravens if this offense keeps up. It's been pretty miserable.
Yeah, I hope they get Brashad Perriman back. I hope he's not too badly injured. He took quite a hit on the sideline. At first, I thought it was a dirty hit, but I'm told it's clean. The hit was low enough. I thought maybe he was a defensive receiver. I guess I still don't know that rule very well. But
I don't think anyone does. I think you're right.
But both of those picks were really tough breaks. The balls really bounced Chicago's way today. They both sort of bounced up in the air, and they were good plays by the defensive backs. And Chicago never gets turnovers. Last year, they tied an all-time NFL record for fewest turnovers, and they had not started the season well this season. And so they really needed to come through with some turnovers today, and they did do that. I'll give them some credit for that. I'm not real high on the Bears, but they did do some good things today, and that was one of the things they did. Really quickly, you brought up Trubisky. Another thing that Baltimore did a very, very good job of, and we're going to see it a lot the rest of the way if you're a Bears fan, they kept Trubisky in the pocket and did a really good job of not allowing him to get outside without having pressure in his face. And now he's got to sit in the pocket. And, you know, his receivers are pretty bad, but he also looks a little bit lost back there every once in a while. This is where, you know, the experience comes in, and it's going to take him a while to get his feet under him. We're going to find out what he's made of over the last 10 or so games of the season, where defenses aren't going to let him get outside too easily anymore. And I thought Baltimore really showed the way on that. I was quite certain somebody would do it very quickly. And they did an outstanding job of showing the rest of the league how it's done. And we'll just have to see how he develops from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trubisky had that 29-yard scramble. I think it was third down earlier in the game. Other than that, he was really contained a lot. Again, I mean, I know he has no receivers to throw to. His tight ends aren't great. But I think his athleticism will make up for his errors to begin with. But I like where Trubisky is at this point. I mean, I think you guys have a bright future because you guys have had some down years for quite a while. And, you know, I think it's going to be all right for you guys.
Yeah, heaven help us all, Don. I sure hope so.
Absolutely.
I've been waiting long enough.
it's been quite a while, Tom.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on today. And I thought it was a pretty good ball game all in all. And I wish you guys luck the rest of the year.
Absolutely. Same to you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
And it's back to me, your sad Kansas City Chiefs super fan. And where to start? I will begin with just simply stating that you know, we've seen some games this year where teams were outmatched on one side or the other, or one team was sloppy on one side or the other. I don't think anywhere in the league have we seen a no-show sort of outing as the Chiefs were in the first half of this game, with the Steelers visiting the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead. The Chiefs ended the entire first half with 6 total yards. That is 6. Do not adjust your podcast listening device. 6 yards. And that was largely because, honestly, the Steelers came out with the exact same game plan as they used against the Chiefs 9 months earlier in the playoffs. And this was something that Greg, the Steelers superfan, and I talked about a lot about during the battle, was that a lot of this was going to be defined by the legacy of that game. What was learned in that game was that, these are fairly even teams in a lot of ways. The Steelers, led by Ben Roethlisberger, have not lost to the Chiefs in, I think, the last 6 or 7 now straight matchups. The one time that the Steelers lost to the Chiefs in the last 5, 6 odd years was with Landry Jones under center. So, the Steelers were confident coming into this game, clearly wanting to expel the demons of their loss last week, that was, made them look fairly bad, and they made the Chiefs look horrible. And as a Chiefs fan, it was it was frustrating. It was basically sending this team that has been amazing in 2017 with the triplets of Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, and MVP candidate Alex Smith just back into 2016, when suddenly this offense could not get anything going. And they weren't even being ambitious towards some of the deeper and better plays. They were throwing a lot of screen passes. They were getting blown up. They weren't able to protect Smith well. And granted, this was also largely due to injuries, which were a major theme throughout this game. The second half changed quite a bit. The Chiefs were able to come back out of despite the fact that the Chiefs only had 6 total yards, and that Le'Veon Bell, just like in the playoff victory of the Steelers over the Chiefs in Arrowhead 9 months earlier, continued to run all over them for over 100 yards in the first half. The Chiefs went into the second half only trailing 12-3, with that three points coming off of a basically a muffed Steelers return on the safety free kick that the Chiefs were able to translate into a field goal. But I mean, in the second half, it was fits and starts, but the Chiefs did finally get things moving, and they really had a chance to come back in this game. I think a lot of the conversation in Chiefs land is going to be about the decision by Andy Reid on basically their first trip into the red zone. He decided to go for it in 4th and 2 on about the 10 or 12, something like that. And they did not complete. I mean, basically, Alex Smith threw a good pass to our second string tight end, Demetrius Harris, who caught it up high. The problem was that he had 3 Steelers right around him. And in order for that catch to count in the end zone, he needs to be able to bring that down and secure it. And it was just obvious, based on the proximity of the Steelers' D-backs and the way the Steelers have been basically outplaying the Chiefs in terms of physical ball on defense, that he was just going to get mugged. And that's exactly what happened. He wasn't able to totally bring it down. I mean, I think it would have been challengeable, considering just how long he had both hands on that ball before it got knocked loose, and somehow the whistle didn't blow, and, it's in the end zone. But either way, so that was a total missed opportunity. If they would have kicked the field goal there, suddenly we're looking at a game that is 12-6. Either way, the Chiefs end up getting a touchdown and really driving this thing. But then same thing that got the Chiefs, as in the Eagles game in week 2, big pass out to a wide receiver deep by Big Ben. The Chiefs should intercept it. It bounces off our DB's helmet after it goes through both of his hands, goes up in the air. Antonio Brown, of course, catches it, runs it in for a touchdown. Just an absolutely inexplicable play, the dagger in the heart. The Chiefs still tried to come back. They weren't able to get it there. 19-13 was the Steelers' victory. But the more important thing was after that point, in this last minute or so, the Chiefs still had the opportunity. If they would have driven downfield and gotten a touchdown, they could have won this thing. But as a part of that, as a part of this going all out for that, Tyreek Hill took the kickoff and ran it. He got a good run down to the 45-yard line, and then it just got destroyed on the sideline, to the point that it was a bad concussion, that it was clear that all the players around him were trying to get the medical team rushing over to him. And Kelce got a concussion last week and made it through the protocol. I would be kind of surprised to see Tyreek Hill make it all the way through the protocol by Thursday for the Chiefs game against the Raiders. And that's really worrisome. The Chiefs are potentially going into this game against the Raiders on Thursday night without their entire interior offensive line that continue to be banged up. They may be also missing their top 3 wide receivers. And also, the Chiefs lost our Kendrick West, our 3rd down back, during this game to an injury, also to a concussion. And that leaves, I don't know, I mean, it's going to be Kareem Hunt and Akeem Hunt behind him. So while the Chiefs' initial run has been exciting and amazing, they're now 5-1, and there's been this open question in Chiefs land, is are the Chiefs peaking too early? With all of the injuries that are now mounting up for the team, I think that is a very legitimate question, especially going into an important division matchup.
All right. Up next, it is me, yours truly, the Detroit Lions superfan, Josh. And with me is Chris, our New Orleans Saints superfan. And Chris, we had the definition of a barn burner here, my friend. We had 90 points scored in this one, which is not a surprise highest Vegas total of the week. However, in my game recap, I pretty much you know, looked like an idiot because I said that it'd be the opposite. I thought it would be kind of low scoring like the last time these two teams met up. But it was definitely not the case, and kind of exciting there in the second half of what we thought was going to be a blowout. What are your news and notes here from the game, Chris?
I mean, good Lord. This was I've never seen two teams win and lose a game at the exact same time. I mean, the Saints, they went up by, I think, 38 in the third quarter. They had a 38-point lead. Should have been done. Just done. I Stafford was hurt. I'm watching with my wife. We're agreeing with Chris Spielman. They should have pulled Stafford. The Saints should have pulled Breeze. There's no reason. They did pull Teron Armstead because it was his first game back from injury. They figured the game was wrapped up. So they took him out to save him for next week, had to put him back in. I mean, it was incredible. The Saints defense, and I believe it was 2012, was the last time they've had a pick six. They had two today. One of them by a defensive lineman, which was the second pick six by a defensive lineman in this game. The other one by Ashawn Robinson for your Lions. It was just such a weird, nothing went right, yet somehow everything went right kind of game for both teams at different parts. It was nuts. It was one of the craziest games I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I completely agree. You mentioned the pick sixes from the D line, and Stafford finishes this game with three touchdowns and three interceptions. But honestly, I can't remember any of those interceptions just being a straight up pick. I believe all of them were batted at the line or were tipped or deflected in some way, shape, or form. I think the story of this game, and they talked about it, you know, Spielman and throughout the broadcast, a dozen pass deflections by the Saints. And, you know, I think they had four or five sacks on this one. Of course, you mentioned Jordan's INT. That one was the one that sealed the game for sure. Detroit was definitely backed up on their own end zone after Jamal Agnew really kind of made people tune back in by making it a two-score game. You know, next thing you know, he's basically misplays a punt, and the Lions are about at their own 18-inch line trying to make something work here when they've just been literally getting their asses handed to them the entire game. And most of that was due to the O-line looking terrible. I mean, they had no TJ Lang today. The play calling, I thought, was brutally predictable again in the first quarter. Jim Bob Cooter just trying to run the ball on first and second down. You know, almost every first down, the Saints were ready for it. The Saints were, you know, definitely showing, you know, I mentioned in our game preview, this isn't the same Saints defense that everyone thinks is are just sorry sacks and pathetic. I mean, you saw them get after Stafford. Yeah, the O-line is awful, but that sack fumble early, they're already having to play from behind. You know, the only thing that kind of, you know, made you think that this game was going to be close was Golden Tate displayed why he's still one of the best, if not the best, after the catch with that 45-yard touchdown, which just kind of both that the whole story of the first quarter, I thought, Chris, was tackling was kind of at a premium on both sides. We saw it on that Ted Ginn 20-yard catch as well.
Well, it was, man. I know we were joking about how we keep this call under 5 minutes for the sake of the show. To touch on the Saints defense, this is a really young defense, and though, I mean, they just, I think they gassed out. They played with a lot of emotion, a lot of intensity in those first really 2.5 quarters, and it showed. I mean, Cam Jordan has been an amazing player for the Saints defense for years and gets zero recognition because of how historically bad they've been. He alone at defensive end had, I think it was 5 tackles, 4 solo, 2 sacks, one of them, or 2 sacks and then a pick six, and 3 passes batted down at the line. He was an absolute wrecking crew, which had Stafford on a really beat-up offensive line. And, I mean, let's not forget, Stafford came into this game with a high ankle sprain, busted up some ribs before the half. He was running for his life, which opened up plays for Alex Okafor and other D linemen to get in there. It was bizarre. And in this secondary, you know, this was the going into, I think, last week, you know, they've had to make a change at linebacker. This was the youngest defense in the NFL. you know, average age is, I think, 23. So you're going to have plays like the Lattimore play, or I'm sorry, the Golden Tate play, where they were going for the strip instead of the tackle. And Crawley kind of came back down to earth a little bit this week and had some pass interference calls against him. They need to tighten that up. But this defense shows promise, you know, and there's a decent chance, knock on wood, the Saints can make a run here. I mean, we go into Green Bay next week without Aaron Rodgers. I think Chicago after that, and either Buffalo or Tampa following that week. The Saints have the ability to start adding to this above 500 record we finally have, and can make some noise in the NFC South this year. I'm looking forward to it, which if you read my review at the end of the Patriots game, I was saying blow it up, so I'm going to have to eat crow a little bit on that one.
Yeah, you and I were both on opposite ends of the spectrum at that point, my friend. We were riding high, you know, thinking we had just got jobbed off the Falcons win. But honestly, I mean, the Falcons had outplayed us in that game, and that was the case here. I mean, the Saints just they completely outplayed us. You know, we already mentioned how bad the Lions O-line was, but I mean, on defense, they couldn't stop the run either. I mean, Ingram and Kamara were basically doing whatever they wanted out of the backfield on pass routes as well. And I mean, it was like A'shaun Robinson, he was about the only one that looked competent aside from Jared Davis. But on the you know, as far as the Saints passing attack, I mean, they were running these bunch formations early in the game and the Lions just could not defend that. And I mean, I think they did that probably, you know, six different times in the first half. And then, you know, but like you mentioned, the Saints D on that other side of the ball, they looked so much improved, a lot of talent there, a lot of first round draft picks. And I mean, you can only be bad for so long. They're really underrated. And I feel like this game was over basically in the second quarter. Once A'shaun left with that injury, you know, the Saints ran a couple trick plays, one being that fourth and one conversion. That just took the air out of the tires for the Lions. I mean, you know, Robinson did come back on that drive, but they were gassed and just getting ran over. You know, there was no way that they were coming back. And, you know, they tried, they clawed back, you know, typical Lions fashion. But right when the Lions got stopped right before the first half on like with an inch or two to go, you know, Darren Fells, who played another good game, just missed another touchdown effort by a couple inches. But you know, story here, injuries, not only coming in, but also, you know, the attrition that the Lions are going to feel. The bye week comes at a great time for them. They lost both of their starting safeties. Glover Quinn out with the concussion. Tavon Wilson, I think he busted up some ribs as well, and I think they went down on the same drive. But, you know, Kamara's out there hurtling over Darius Slay, and, I mean, that defense couldn't stop anything they were doing. You saw some really uncharacteristic stuff, like Matt Prater missed a field goal. You know, the pick six by New Orleans put this at a 5-touchdown deficit, and that's kind of when I was agreeing with Chris Spielman, like you mentioned, just get these guys out of the game. And Amir Abdullah fumbled right after that, and it gets overturned. And I mean, all that did was get Stafford beat up even more. Golden Tate got absolutely smashed. He was destroyed on two consecutive plays. And I think they said that he went out with a shoulder injury, but he looked like he got his bell rung, and it wouldn't surprise me to find out he had a concussion after this. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, we had three offensive linemen leave the game in the third quarter, and the Lions got physically and competitively whooped in this game, and I think that's all there is to it, Chris.
Well, the most surprising stat, I think, about this game that's going to go over, I think, overshadowed is Drew Brees had a horrible game. The Saints scored over 50 points, and Drew Brees only had 189 yards passing and 2 touchdowns. He played terrible. And now every Saints fan knows that you're going to get one or two of these games a year where Brees just lays an egg. And hopefully that's this year. Last year, I remember specifically, it was the New York Giants, where he could not move the ball to save his life. The only difference is this year we have a defense who rises to the occasion and actually puts some, you know, the defense scored 2 touchdowns today.
Yeah, they scored 3, actually. Yeah. But there was 5 total. 5 total special teams touchdowns in this game. Defense and special teams. So, yeah, absolutely just a barn burner in every sense of the word, for sure.
But the Saints had multiple opportunities to close this game out, and Brees just could not keep the offense on the field. So that's something that I think both Saints fans need to consider going into Green Bay next week, even without Aaron Rodgers. And maybe something that Detroit, I mean, if you're going to take a moral victory on a loss, you know, they shut down a quarterback who had not thrown an interception all season until today. So
yeah,
it's
really,
been, man, what a game.
Yeah, it's about the only silver lining for Lions fans. You hate to see somebody get injured, but with the Vikings being down to their third quarterback, it sounds like Bridgewater's coming back soon, but Rodgers being most likely out for the season and the Bears turning to Trubisky, I mean, that's really the only hope that they have is to get healthy after the bye week. And hopefully, you mentioned it, the Saints in prime position to make a run. We're hoping the Lions can too. But Chris, hopefully we meet up in the playoffs and we'll see how it goes, my friend. Again, it was really going to be hard to keep a 90-point game under 5 minutes. It looks like we went about double that. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. And best of luck in week 6.
Take care, buddy.
All right, and we now move on to the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. I am your sad Kansas City Chiefs superfan breaking down this game, but I honestly can't really complain about sadness because, Brian, man, you guys really were dealt some blows this week, and it's not just the 23-10 loss. It is the loss of several other guys on the field. Tell us what happened and tell us how you're feeling there, Brian.
Oh my God, I can't begin to express how shitty I feel. Sorry, I know this is a family podcast, but it's a rough day for Packer fans. There's no replacing Aaron Rodgers. I think the coaches really like Brett Hundley. I think he's a competent backup, and I think he'll be better next week, and we got a bye the week after that, so hopefully they can put a few things together from a game planning perspective. But we need Rodgers to help cover up our lack of an O-line and a limited running game. And Hundley's yet to show that he can do anything close to that. He failed a lot of passes today. I can't count how many times he missed on a screen pass high. Didn't really play quickly enough. He didn't process very well today. And maybe that's because he just is fresh. Maybe he's better next week. But it's a rough day for Packer fans. Poured myself a stiff drink, getting ready to, be frustrated for most of the rest of the year. Pretty limited running game today. Minnesota's a good team up front. I think better days are hopefully ahead. But, man, the O-line, you referenced injuries. We are down our top 6 offensive tackles now. We had better hope that Brett Hundley can stay healthy, first of all, and that we can get some semblance of health back along that offensive line. It's really tough to overcome that many injuries in one position group. We've been playing guards at tackle for a couple of weeks now and have been able to get by, but you run up against a team like Minnesota, that defensive line, and you knew we were in trouble. I thought we had Hundley in a pretty tough spot today with, like I said, nobody really left along the O-line, and at Minnesota, which is a really good defense, behind, loud environment, no running game. He played about as well as anybody could expect given those set of circumstances, but I don't know, man. I'm not super optimistic. It's a dark day.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, you know, the O-line was already struggling, and you lost two more guys today. But, you know, Rodgers has had the same injury before and came back, it sounds like, after 7 weeks in the last time. I mean, is there any hope that if things hold together that he might be back on the field this season? Or, I mean, what are you hearing out of the team?
It's interesting. The team's official Twitter account put out the notice that he could be done for this season. That's really odd. The Packers aren't typical to do that. I'm sure if you asked Rodgers, he would not tell you that. That said, the last collarbone injury was to the left side, non-throwing, obviously. This one's to the right. I don't know the extent to which the fact that it's the throwing side affects the timeline at all, but, you know, I'm hopeful that if we can piece together a couple of good weeks here with Hundley, that we might be able to sneak into the playoffs now. I think it's going to be tough, especially given all the other injuries we dealt with. This is really the first injury to the Packers, one of their key players that's going to be out for an extended period. I think David Bakhtiari has been out for 4 weeks, and he and Bulaga got nicked up in this game, which were the two offensive linemen that you referenced that we lost. So, man, I don't know. I'm just depressed. That's all.
Well, on the Vikings side, Joe, you know, you guys have also had trouble kind of keeping a healthy quarterback, you know, there under center for extended periods of time there. This is another Case Keenum game. And you guys win, you know, obviously, despite, you know, with obviously the asterisks of the, you know, the Packers injuries. But I mean, what did you see on the Vikings side? What do you see out of your team? And how does all of this change the way you view the division?
Well, yeah, I mean, as soon as Rodgers went down and he was getting, you know, went into the tent and then eventually was being carted off as the, you know, the Vikings had the ball the very next possession. You could tell on the Packers sideline that they had the same kind of deflated nature as far as, you know, the, you know, collective, you know, energy of the team had gone away. And it's something as a Vikings fan that I've seen many a time. Peterson going down, Bridgewater going down, Bradford, you know, going out. And then Cook going down a couple weeks back. You can tell when the team, you know, gets a little dejected in that situation. As far as the Vikings go, you know, when they hit on that 27-yard screen pass to open up the scoring, you could kind of tell right there that, you know, the Vikings got a little bit loose. You know, they, you know, pretty much thought that they had the game in the bag. That first half was just a bunch of just errors by both squads, really. I mean, penalties kind of were starting to get out of hand and, you know, just making dumb plays the rest of the way in the half. I don't think that at any point Zimmer or the Vikings defense was really worried that Hundley was going to do anything to really beat them. It was really just a case of, you know, let's keep everybody in front of us. At some point, Hundley, who has had no reps during the week, probably hasn't had any first team reps for the year. And, you know, let's just keep the ball in front of us, tackle. Going to make mistakes. We'll go out, we'll, you know, kick a couple field goals and we'll grab this win. And that's basically what happened in this game. Once Rodgers went down, it was essentially over.
All right, well, we've seen an interesting flattening of this division, just in terms of the parity between the teams, and it's going to be an interesting one to continue to watch the rest of the year. But either way, I mean, I my condolences, but also thank both of you, Brian and Joe, for being on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah, this is your Washington Redskins superfan, Neil. I'm here with San Francisco 49ers superfan, Charlie, to recap the Washington victory by 26 points to 24. And, Charlie, what happened?
Well, I figured this was going to be the blowout, and the first blowout for the Niners this season. And through the first two quarters there being 17-0, I figured it was happening. And then they yanked Brian Hoyer, put in C.J. Beathard, and all of a sudden the Niners went right down the field and scored right before halftime, made a respectable 17-7. But that Redskins team just is so, you know, set up perfectly to build a lead with Kirk Cousins, and they got that lead back as the Niners tied it up late and were able to finish with just a two-point victory. So the Niners go on their fifth game that they have lost by a combined 13 points and go to 0-6.
Yeah, it was, I guess, a turning point in this game. Well, there's a few turning points, perhaps, but probably the biggest one was pulling the quarterback so early. When that happened, were you happy with that move, or did you think that was a mistake, knee-jerk reaction? Because were you down by 14 at that point, or were you down by 17 at that point? 14, huh?
I can't remember. I want to say it was 17, but I believe was it 10 points that Washington had scored before, and then they ended up scoring their next touchdown on that out route to Tom. Who was the running back?
Yeah, to Chris Thompson, yeah. Samaji Perrin.
Oh, the rookie. Yeah. So I think they ended up bringing him in right after that on the Jimmy Ward the almost interception by Jimmy Ward that ended up getting intercepted by a very next play by Rashard Robinson.
Yeah.
Then, you know, Bethard came in, let him, you know, on a decent drive, then had to punt. And then you guys came down and scored the field goal. So it was 14 when he came in.
That was 6:53 to go in the second quarter. You had that. Well, what an unlucky play. I mean, the guy did. He was so close to getting the interception. It took a reversal from the review guys. But what did you make of Bethard? I thought he actually looked not too bad. I was kind of thinking Washington are going to throw everything at him, and they did on some plays. But your offensive line held up well. I like your right tackle. And it was, I thought he did okay. He certainly, like you said, he took you down and you scored. And he threw for about 245 yards in the end. So reasonable performance from him.
Yeah, something to build upon. Led the team down and, really should have, gotten into field goal range if not for a very unfortunate offensive PI penalty on Pierre Garçon. But realistically, if you look at that play again, Pierre Garçon got called for a offensive pass interference for screening for Carlos Hyde, who was open on a flat route. Yeah. But Bethard threw the ball to the wrong player. And in the end, Pierre Garçon got called for making space for Carlos Hyde, but the ball was thrown to him. So if he was trying to block for Carlos Hyde early, which is pass interference, typically the ball wouldn't go to the guy who's blocking. So what advantage do you get by blocking someone and then catching a ball? I mean, it was a horrible penalty. But in the way of a Niner fan, Bethard should have thrown the ball to the flat, and then it would have been a real penalty at that point.
Yeah.
At least, we're competing. We don't look like Chip Kelly. We don't look like the Jim Tom Sula experience. We look like a good team that just can't get over the hump. It's starting to get maddening. But at the same time, I keep on going back to this. If you would have told me in late July that the Niners were going to be 0-6 and, set up for that first overall pick and had lost five games by 13 points, including up in Seattle, and each one of these games having a chance for them to win and a chance to get you on the edge of your seat, I would have taken that six ways from Sunday. I mean, the team is young and they're going to be better. Losing some of the bigger players like Navarro Bowman this week was tough for a longtime Niner fan. And, takes on your heartstrings a little bit there to lose such a huge player for your team that's done such amazing things for the franchise, including one of the most iconic plays, the pick of the stick. And, but overall, it's something that needs to happen for this team to completely turn it around. They got to get rid of some of these veterans. It's just like this 0-6 start. It's tough to see, but it needs to happen.
Yeah. Now, towards the end of the game, you were knocked out of field goal position. I think that was your penultimate drive when Matt Ioannidis got the sack, which kind of, I think you lost 8 yards and pushed you out of a field goal position. That's Jim Tom Sula coming back to get you. He's doing a great job with us. I love him.
I would agree. I'm very jealous of not just you guys having old Jimmy T back in that small, confined defensive line room. He's probably the best in the business with allowing him to be what he is there. So I'm so happy for you guys. And not only that, Greg Minutsky, longtime defensive coordinator in San Francisco during the Nolan and Singletary years, and then also Vernon Davis. As a Niner fan who got to meet Vernon back at the, after his second year, I want to say, I was so excited to see him end up coming into his own under Singletary. And now, it looked like he was done there with the Niners, and he has revitalized his career back home in Washington, D.C., and has just been amazing. So I was glad to see him with one of the, that last drive that Washington started the ball on the 15-yard line threw that long pass to Vernon Davis to get him into field goal range. That basically iced the game. So Vernon Davis just doing it to the Niners like he used to do to you know, all the different NFC West teams back in the day. So I was excited to see that, even wore my Vernon Davis jersey after wearing my Frank Gore jersey last week. So it was good to see him play well. But overall, man, that Redskins front seven, can you tell me more about them? They are lighting it up. Number 53, that linebacker, was all over the place.
Yeah, we've got a good group of inside linebackers with Mason Foster, Zach Brown, who we got from Buffalo in the offseason. Well, as a free agent, he was released by Buffalo. And we've got Martrell Spate in there as well. They're doing a good job inside. But really, they're doing a good job inside because that defensive line is playing like something we haven't seen in Washington for years and years and years, Charlie. Matt Ioannidis was a fifth-round pick last year. He had a sack and a half today. He's had pressure all year and looks terrific inside next to Jonathan Allen, who we all know, of course, the first-round pick from Alabama. He left the game injured today, but he's had a terrific rookie season and a couple of free agent pickups that we got. But really, honestly, I put it down to Jim Tomsula. He's just brought a different vibe. There's a real sort of emphasis there for Washington to attack from that defensive line position. For the last few years, it's been, well, just kind of hold guys up and let linebackers do something, but he's really pushing those guys forward. And it's made a huge, huge difference. And you can see with Preston Smith, number 94, and Ryan Kerrigan, the two outside linebackers, they're having good seasons because there's plenty of pressure coming from the inside. So, yeah, I mean, happy days defensively for Washington. We won the game without Josh Norman. But for those who didn't see the game, Charlie, the game ended as you were driving down the field. Time running out, you were down to about 15, 16 seconds. And Bether threw the interception, picked off by Fuller. That finished the game off. But I have to tell you, I was thinking, oh, no, here we go. We missed the extra point. We should be 27-24, missed the extra point. You guys are going to go down here and kick this field goal, and Washington are going to get a right slap in the face. But thankfully, that didn't happen.
Yep. That was a horrible call. But going back to Jim Tomsula, I have one very important question. Does he still have the mustache? Did he grow back? I saw him at the combine. That mustache was gone. Is it back? Did he grow back?
Oh, he's got that mustache, and I'm telling you.
Good stuff.
That mustache is almost as scary as Jim himself. He's fantastic. You see him in practice, you know, and he's standing there in front of the defensive line. And I'm telling you, you could imagine if they do something wrong, he's going to go there and he's going to absolutely hit them. No pad, no helmets. He's going to go out there and just flatten anybody. I bet he thinks on that sideline he could still play.
By the way, and I agree, he's awesome. One thing I was going to mention is Pierre Garçon, a former Redskin. He just reminds me so much of Anquan Boldin. He's younger. I say this every week, but I'm sure that this will be on Twitter somewhere, but there's this drag route that he catches, turns up field, is immediately hit by a Washington corner and he's a younger kid. I hope he's okay, as you said, on our slack.
Nicholson, yeah.
But, he just absolutely unloads on this guy. And it's usually the opposite, you know, a corner destroying a DB in that position. But it was basically a defenseless receiver that got turned into a defenseless defensive back. And it was very scary looking. So, I mean, a big hit, but then one of those things where you go, oh, and then you're like, uh-oh, the guy, you know, he was immediately in pain. So
yeah,
I'm sure you'll see that on Twitter, but those hits right there just kind of scare me for the long-term success of the NFL.
Apparently he's okay, and that's great news, of course. But you know, if you had given me the option, who do you want to take last year? Keep Jackson or keep Garçon? There's something about Garçon you kind of want him, don't you? He's going to give you 100% every minute of every game.
Yep. Great player.
Just a couple of quick questions for you. Looking forward, then you got a chance perhaps tonight to see your quarterback of the future. I'm not talking about Beathard. I'm talking about Cousins. Thinking you guys are going to have a pick probably in the top three probably by the end of the season, certainly top five. Would you rather have one of the young guys coming out, or would you like to have Cousins?
Well, if you're asking a Niner fan what you would rather have, out of all three of those combinations, honestly, C.J. Beathard, you know, a guy that we drafted out of, you know, third-round pick. Joe Montana was a third-round pick, kind of unassuming guy. Comes in, and can he change and revitalize the entire Niners organization as a third-rounder? Who knows? I mean, that's the best possible scenario. Second one, honestly, is going to be to draft a guy. If you're able to bring a guy in that your quarterback guru likes, you do that, salary cap implications are favorable, even as a first overall pick for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years until you have to re-sign the guy. But Kirk Cousins is going to be someone who, unless he somehow turns the Washington down for a re-sign and then goes and gives the Niners a home cooking discount, I just don't see that happening. They're going to have to pay way too much for him. And honestly, I think old Kurt Cousins will get re-signed by the Allen guy there in Washington. So I think that'll end up happening. He's a great quarterback, though. I really do. And I think he's one of those guys who a lot of the team rallies behind. And he's just steady Eddie. You know, he gets the job done. 300 yards today, 2 touchdowns. He basically did a punt there on that interception. Mm-hmm. You know, they threw the ball from the 30 and the Niners took over at their own 20. So it was basically a punt. And overall, he was extremely efficient.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think the big question for me there with Cousins is always the salary cap thing. If the 49ers or Cleveland or somebody takes him, that's $30 million of your cap. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's worth it, is
it? No, you're right. That's exactly right. I'm just gasping at how much that would just hamstring your franchise if he doesn't end up taking you to a Super Bowl. You'd have so much pressure on him.
And one last thing, nothing to do with this game, but I know you are the absolute expert in Pigskin Pick'em. You're the, at least 1 year reigning champion, and I think you're winning again this year. Makes me totally sick. Give me a tip on how to get better, because last week I scored 4.
There's some weeks where the NFL is just drunk, you know, and I thought this week was going to be one of them when the Jets were up 14-0 on the Patriots. And there's some games you're just not going to guess. But I would say when you're doing your picks, find 1 or 2 games that you're just like, okay, this could be an upset. And then when you're looking for upsets, don't touch divisional. Or you could look at divisional games, because if you're doing like an eliminator challenge, those are the ones you never want to touch. Division games can happen, you know, just weirdly. So not a whole lot of things. It's all luck, you know. No one really knows what's going to happen. And if I end up winning 2 in a row, then maybe I'll be the Nostradamus. But until then, I can't take it. I can't take that title.
Congratulations on last year. Congratulations on how you're doing this year. You're far better than your team. And I will take that advice and apply it. And if I don't get any better, I'll be back on the phone to you.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Well, good win for your Redskins. Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers, Charlie. Good luck going ahead. And I'm sure it's not long before that first win comes along.
All right. So the next game is the New England Patriots traveling to the Meadowlands to take on the New York Jets. And the Patriots ended up winning this game, but the game was a lot closer than a lot than many people expected. And we have our Patriots super fan, Patrick, here to come recap the game with us. And I'm just going to put this out there from the beginning. This is the first year as a Jets fan that I have not watched a full Jet game this year. At all. I haven't watched a single full Jet game. Today was the first Jet game that I watched the majority of. I may have missed a play or two. But the reason why is because this was the first Jet game all year that I actually wanted the Jets to win. And it turns out that the Jets are like your 4-year-old child that you need to use reverse psychology on, because when you want them to win, they lose. And when you want them to lose, they win. So, I mean, Patrick, you have kids, so you could probably relate to this.
I do have a 4-year-old child, and I will tell you right now that as a parent, you cannot consistently take an approach that gets a 4-year-old to do what you want them to do. So I think you should expand that to just being a fan of the Jets in general, because that is an inconsistent team.
Yeah, and they also did the classic Jets thing where they give you a little bit of hope. They went up 14-0. Josh McCown was throwing bullets all over the yard against the depleted New England Patriots secondary, against one of the more overrated cornerbacks, and I think in all of football, Malcolm Butler. But It didn't. The Jets went into conservative mode, and Tom Brady did his thing. I don't think he played a great game.
Malcolm Butler did just enough. An interception and a couple of hurries might have had a sack in there. So Malcolm Butler might be the most overrated corner in football, but he had a really good day today.
Yeah, but I just can't get the sight of Taylor Gabriel breaking his ankles in the Super Bowl out of my mind. And you could just say you can't get the interception against Seattle out of your mind. So that's fair to say, too. But in general, I think the biggest story that's going to come out of this game is the Austin Seferian Jenkins would be touchdown that got called back.
That was hard to see, man. Like that was I'll confess. I've been on both ends of calls like that before in much bigger games, right? In playoff games, and we know the ones that we're talking about here. But man, that was brutal. And yes, hearing the explanation, I understand it. Watching the replay before they made a call, I'm like, oh, he bobbled it. And then I'm like, well, who cares? Like he bobbled, but he clearly had possession when he crossed the goal line. And apparently that was not the case. So in the grand scheme of things, I don't know if it matters that much anyway, but man, that is a vicious call to have called against your team.
Right. And I just think it's emblematic of a bigger problem. The NFL in general is I just feel like the referees have too much say into what's going on right now. It's one of those common sense things. I think it's what's going on in baseball now too, with the replay of if every time there's a close play at a base, if the runner gets on there, he hits the base, but oh, did he take a millisecond? Did his foot come off the base for a millisecond and was the tag still on? Like it goes against the spirit of the rule, in my opinion. And like that was a touchdown 100 times out of 100. And it may not have affected the outcome of the game, but that touchdown would have cut the lead to 3 as opposed to the Jets getting a field goal out of it. And that was a huge deal.
Yeah, man, I hear you on the spirit of it. It's like they don't have enough lawyers involved in this, so they go to New York to find some more. Like every time there's a call back to the booth, that's what's happening, is you got a bunch of guys scouring through the rule book to try and figure out, you know, whether or not they can make a case. And it's like, man, who cares? That was a touchdown. Like, why are you taking it off the board like that? And then I thought Jenkins was going to get ejected for getting in the ref's face about it. So, which would have been hysterical if that happened.
Yeah, I was surprised he was that calm. Like, I thought he would be completely losing it. I honestly, like, that's how ridiculously, like, backwards that entire play. But obviously, I mean, we all knew the Jets coming into the season weren't going to be a good team. I still don't think they're a good team. Maybe that'll be better what people think. The thing that bothers me is that, like, the people that are making plays are a 37-year-old quarterback and a 28, 29-year-old wide receiver. 38, whatever. Yeah. The point stands. Like, and at some point, the Jets are going to have to see what Bryce Petty has. It's probably not much, but McCown, he's done an admirable job. But again, where's he taking you at the end of the day besides 6 wins and out of the top 10 of the draft? So like that kind of bothers me. But the bigger story is the Patriots in general. This was probably like a C+ performance by the Patriots. How concerned are you for the rest of the season? I know the NFL in general, there's not many great teams out there, so of course they obviously have a chance to win the Super Bowl. But like it doesn't seem as pronounced the difference between the Patriots and every other team in the league as it usually is.
It's not. All of our wins have been ugly wins, you know, and you know that, and no offense, not against good teams. So, you know, this definitely smells, and because of the shape of the AFC East, I still believe we're going to win that division pretty comfortably. Cause I mean, I haven't seen a reason to believe anything other than that. You know, so we'll go to the playoffs, but this feels like a one and done team. It really does. And I've been on it. Everybody's been mocking me for years, like in our little group, about, you know, the Patriots keep like giving away their draft picks to get guys in the last year of their deal. And I'm like, that's not sustainable, and it's going to catch up to you. And I really feel like it's caught up to the team with a lack of youth and depth. Like we don't have quality young players. We have a bunch of like low level Jags that are starting after washing out elsewhere. Right, like, and it's hurting right now.
Yeah, this team reminds me of that 2009 Patriots team that got blown out in the first round against Baltimore with that big Ray Rice touchdown. And then the next year they took Hernandez and Gronk. Like that's what this team reminds me of. But again, it's still better than most Jets teams that I have watched over my fandom. So I don't feel sorry for you, Patrick.
I'm not looking for apologies and tears. Like I get it. Like it's going to be our turn pretty soon. I'm watching the dynasty crumble here.
Well, it's our turn is over here. We're going to go on to the next game and hand it over to whoever's next. Thanks, Patrick.
All right. Talk to you later, AJ.
All right. Moving along now, it's me, Josh, your Lions super fan. And with me to recap the Los Angeles Chargers victory over the Oakland Raiders today, it's Ken, our Los Angeles Chargers super fan. Ken almost said San Diego again. But last minute field goal by Nick Novak for you guys. Tell us about this game. What are the news and notes here from this victory?
Well, it was the last second victory for the Chargers, which is nice to be on the winning side of one of these after so many have gone the other way for us. But man, was it ugly. It was not a good win by any stretch of the imagination. In the first half, the Chargers could really do very little offensively, and defensively they were just not doing enough. But then in the second half, really on the back of Melvin Gordon, the offense was able to move a little bit. And then because the Raiders messed up and the Chargers defense played pretty stout despite one big play, we were able to eke one out despite not looking very good on offense at all, especially Rivers. At this point, we're winning despite him because they really can't do much in the passing game. And even in the run game, the blocking isn't that great. It's just a testament to Melvin Gordon's talent for him to get the yards that he is getting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, another all-around fantastic game for Melvin Gordon. I believe he had almost 150 total yards on the day, couple touchdowns, one each running and receiving. Very impressed by the work that he was doing, shouldering most of the offensive load there. Was surprised that Keenan Allen didn't really get, you know, going in the game. I didn't really expect to see a whole lot out of Mike Williams. I know they're probably going to be slowly working him in. But with, you know, Allen there, you're looking at Tyrell Williams coming off a fantastic season last year. Hunter Henry had a good game today, 5 for 90. But, you know, overall, it's hard to see somebody like Mike Williams coming in and getting a big target share early. But what are your kind of thoughts on the offense? I know Rivers been struggling, but do you see Williams playing a bigger role, or do you think it's going to have to take like an injury or something for him to get some sort of playing time?
Well, considering it's taken them this long to get Hunter Henry involved after what he did last year on offense, they really haven't even been working him in very much. So I was looking for Mike Williams all day, and he was only in on, I think, a handful of plays, and he did make one big catch. But this coaching staff really seems to work the young guys on offense in very, very slowly. You know, Gates is an all-timer, but he looks really old and slow, and I wish they would just play Hunter Henry full-time rather than mixing him in with Gates.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. What about, can you talk about Trevor Williams? I saw that he had an interception again today, and he's been filling in nicely, it seems like, while Verrett's been out.
Yeah, Trevor Williams is a big, you know, key player on this defense now. He's always been a guy on the younger side that I've looked at as an up-and-comer. And, you know, with Verrett going down, you never want to see that. But he's definitely stepped up. And our, you know, our secondary is, at least on the corner side, is one of the top units in the league. So it's nice to see him blossom into that role now that he's a starter.
Yeah, I thought that both corners did an excellent job today. I know Crabtree made an excellent play on that touchdown in the first quarter, kind of extending there to the pylon. But I thought that, you know, they held Cooper to 28 yards in this one. He's been just not looking like the receiver that we've seen the past couple of years. But I feel like the real kind of mistake that the Raiders made today, and you can probably attest to this, Ken, is the Chargers' run defense has been pretty vulnerable this year so far, and they just again, just didn't seem to really want to give Lynch the workload. And this thing was close. It was a one possession game, basically the whole game. He only got 13 carries. What do you think if they would have gave the ball to Lynch more, that maybe they could have played with a lead for longer, or maybe you had some sort of lead that the Chargers couldn't have came back from?
Yeah, you know, the Chargers were the worst rush defense in the league coming into this game. So I was really surprised, because they were gashing us pretty for like 6 to 8 yards almost seemingly every play in the first half. And so in the second half, I was waiting for them to run the ball, and they never did. And instead, they were running these quick passes that were getting completed, but then the Chargers would just tackle them before the first down. So it was a lot of three and outs that gave Rivers chance after chance after chance after chance. And at the end, it was just a little too much. You know, if you're playing the Chargers, you should be running the ball. And I was happy to see them not go that way, because it did not work out in their favor.
Well, hey, you guys got the win there, 17-16. Both teams are now 2-4 on the season. So we thank you for stopping by, Ken, to talk about the game. And we will see you again in week 6, sir.
Yep. See you later. Peace out.
All right. Moving from one new Los Angeles football team to the other, we have with us the Los Angeles Rams superfan, Jared. And Ryan, our Jacksonville Jaguars superfan, here to recap the Rams' 27-17 victory over the Jaguars today. And Jared, we'll swing it to you first, my friend. What are the news and notes here on the Rams side of things?
Well, they scored 3 touchdowns, and 2 of them were on special teams. So their offense didn't do a whole lot, but they used those 2 touchdowns to get a lead in the first half, and then they just kind of played a little conservative. I mean, they took a couple shots downfield, but did what I'd hope they do, and definitely fed Todd Gurley the ball a lot, and just kind of relied on their defense to hold on in the second half.
Excellent. And I noticed that you mentioned feeding Todd Gurley the ball. I feel like they kind of got away from that last week, so it was good to see them kind of sticking with that. As far as the receiving options in this game, another disappointing outing, I would say, for Sammy Watkins. I saw that he only had 1 catch for 11 yards. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a couple times they targeted him. just from what I was seeing the game, he just wasn't open that much. So I believe Jalen Ramsey was on him most of the game. But yeah, it was just not a lot open. They took a deep shot, almost hit him, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate with giving up a second round pick for him that other than the 49er game, he's not producing a hole on the field, although he may be opening up the underneath stuff for the tight ends and Cooper Kupp. But yeah, he definitely did have a big game, but I'm not really shocked, because Jalen Ramsey is one of the best corners in the league.
Yeah, I know. On the other side, Mr. Bollier is pretty much handling business as well. In my opinion, probably the best cornerback duo in the league. What say you, Ryan?
Well, I'll definitely go along with that. I would rather have 4 wins than have any greatest tandem in the league, though, for sure. It's been so long. Let me I promise I never like to complain about referees, hardly ever. I think it's like it's an easy way out. And, you know, obviously fans complain about that stuff just way too much, in my opinion. But I got to stick up for my team here. And there's 2 just gigantic moments, as it turns out, in the game. I believe it's 17-14, or maybe it's 14-10. I have to remember. Jaguars have a 3rd down deep in their territory. Bortles throws it. Marquise Lee is interfered with. I wasn't too sure. They show the replay. It was so clear. It was a pass interference play. You know, most of the time that happens, you just move on and it's fine. But the very next play was the Rams blocking the punt and getting a touchdown. And that just, it's a killer against the Jaguars if they let special teams touchdowns go, and they let 2 go today. Then later on, there's a forced fumble, and the Jaguars pick it up and start running it back, and they whistle it down, which kills me, because there's been so many plays this year where it's almost completely clear that a that a player's down and the referees just seem to let the play run because that's kind of how it goes in the NFL. And we get the complete opposite. They whistle it down, don't know what was going to happen on the run back now. The Jaguars still got the ball. Maybe they got a field goal off of that. Not really sure, but it would have been a much bigger play and much better territory. And frankly, a quarterback like Blake Bortles needs breaks like that. So two huge moments. The Rams certainly, you know, we're the better team and everything, but I just think the game could have been a lot different had those two calls gone the other way.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. As your resident Lions super fan, I think I've probably spoke about that enough on my short time. I did see the Lee, that phantom interference, or I should say lack thereof, but I didn't see the other call that you spoke of. But yeah, I saw the Lee missed penalty, and I thought that along with the Austin Seferian Jenkins in the Patriots Jets game were probably a couple of the worst calls on the day. But that's pretty much where we're at with this. Nice to see Leonard Fournette taking care of business. Of course, he answered 75 of his 130 yards today, coming pretty much immediately after that Farrell Cooper kick return touchdown to start the game. Kind of a bang bang fireworks. And for a second there, I thought this game was going to rival my Lions and against the Saints, but no, it was 27-17. The Rams with the victory here, going to Jacksonville and coming away victorious. Fellas, anything else that we missed there?
No, I think this was the first game to me personally. The Jaguars have been ranked low in run defense, but I haven't totally bought into it. I might be starting to buy into it. And also Gurley, you know, just played a good game, but it was kind of a consistent run game that beat him today. That was not good to see. And besides Leonard Fournette's 75-yard run, it was a lot of 1 and 2 yard plays, I thought. So kind of both sides of the ball, not overall, just not so good in the run game for the Jags.
What were you going to say, Jared?
I was just going to say, yeah, that Fournette first run, I think, I don't know if he just surprised the Rams defenders how fast he was, because they took horrible angles and he just burned them. But yeah, I was glad to see at least after that first run, they held him in check. And yeah, it was definitely, I think we were talking about beforehand, the game that Jeff Fisher would be proud of, with like good defense and special teams and not a lot of offense, especially at the quarterback position. But last year the Rams lost a lot of games like this about in midseason before they just completely disintegrated. So glad to see them pull out a victory, but definitely could have gone either way with a couple bounces or calls here and there. I mean, the Jags are in first place. Don't be too sad, Ryan. I mean, I think you guys can definitely take that division.
Right. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, definitely both teams making a fantastic case to be the division leaders, especially the Rams, who sit in top now, Jared. So I appreciate both of you fellas stopping by. Again, a couple special teams defensive touchdowns in this one. I haven't looked yet, but I swear this – probably could have been a record-setting day for defensive and special teams touchdowns. I'll have to revisit that. But thanks again for spending some time to go over the game with us, fellas.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, moving along. Again, this is me, Josh, your Detroit Lions superfan, and with me to discuss the Miami Dolphins' victory over the Atlanta Falcons is MJ, our Atlanta Falcons superfan. MJ, a tough loss here as the Falcons dropped to 3-2, and the Dolphins, shockingly, also move up to 3-2. Did not see this one coming, my friend. Going to be honest, a lot of kind of double-digit favorites and heavy favorites this week, and not a lot of games shaping out the way we thought. This would definitely be one of them, my friend. What are your news and notes from this game?
What gets me the most about this game is we go in at the half up 17-0. Whatever it is that happened in that Dolphins locker room at the half, it really turned us into, for people who've been fans of the Falcons for a while, a couple years back, come the second half, We just couldn't get anything going, couldn't get any points to score, could barely make any defensive stops. And that's how we looked today. The second half was, it belonged to Miami. We just didn't do a good job at all. I mean, we didn't score, so that tells you a lot of what you need to know right there. We did a decent job in the beginning on the run defense, but like I said, second half, we couldn't stop a Girl Scout troop.
Now, I was just going to ask, what do you think, how much that has to do with, and I don't want to say abandoning the run game. I didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of this game, but I noticed that Devontae Freeman had, 68 yards on 9 carries. I know 44 of that came on just the one scamper there. Coleman looked pretty good. I think they both split an even amount of touches, kind of 50-50 today. But, almost 8 yards a carry for Freeman. What happened there in the run game? Did they just kind of get away from it?
I think they just got away from it. One thing that I've never understood about this team is we're clicking on all cylinders in the first half, but then come the second half, we start to ease up and not be as aggressive. We don't execute properly. We don't make the proper play calls, and you see it. They would not commit and stick to the run game.
Yeah, definitely odd, especially when you think that, you're wanting to sit on a lead. Like you mentioned, MJ, they went to the locker room with a 17-point lead, and the next 20 points unanswered coming from the Dolphins in the second half. You had mentioned before we started recording that offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian was actually calling the plays from up in the booth this week. Was he up in the booth the entire game, or did he switch from sideline to booth at some point?
No, he was in the booth the entire game. What ended up this was the first game he was not on the field for the play calling. Every game leading up until today, including preseason, he was on the field calling the games. But for some reason, they decided to put him in the booth today. I don't know how much that actually impacts your ability to make plays, because you're calling down instead of just calling in from the side of the field. The one thing I would think being in the booth would do that you can't or that would give you an advantage being in the booth is you get a better bird's eye view of the field and of what's going on that you just don't get from there. Really, that better bird's eye view didn't help at all today. And it kind of makes me wonder, next week when we play against the Patriots, is he going to be back in the booth, or is he going to be on the field?
Yeah, definitely interesting. I know on the other side of the ball, I from what I saw, Jay Ajayi was still getting hit in the backfield quite a bit. And I turned around at the end of this game, and next thing you know, he had 130 yards on the ground with his longest carry being 18. Were they just having a little bit of a hard time stopping the run today?
We've always had run defense issues. One of the things about the Falcons defense is, as fast as they are, it's kind of difficult to be fast against the run. They're definitely a much better pass defense team, which is really kind of odd for me to say, considering just a few years ago, our pass defense was the worst part of our defense. But these last few games, the pass defense has been pretty good, but we haven't figured out the run defense yet. And I just don't know what it is, because we've got some pretty stout linemen, specifically in Grady Jackson. Grady Jarrett. Then you factor in also Dontari Poe, with also Tack McKinley, and you would think we would have a pretty stout run defense, but they just can't get it together.
Well, there you have it, MJ. I appreciate you stopping by and going over this game here with us. I believe Andy's probably celebrating a little too hard. unable to join us, but do appreciate you stopping by and kind of breaking down the tail between the two halves here again with the Dolphins prevailing 20-17 in Atlanta.
Thanks. Yeah, it's definitely not a great way to end the weekend, but it's an ending to the weekend.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. All right. Moving along with the game recaps. Up next is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Arizona Cardinals. Final score, Tampa 33, Arizona 38. And this game definitely not as close as the final score would dictate. A ton of fourth quarter points by the Buccaneers, 47 to be exact. And basically, a couple big stories for this game. First and foremost, Adrian Peterson making his Cardinals debut, and he looked good. 26 carries for 134 yards and a pair of touchdowns. Bruce Arians mentioned that, you know, he wasn't going to get any third down work in this game. No third down work, no problem. Also, no Andre Ellington to be found. Looked like Kerwin Williams kind of got most of the third down action for this game. But the Cardinals definitely moving the ball on the ground, something that we haven't seen a lot of, and that led to a lot of success. Carson Palmer also having a pretty good game here. About almost 300 yards, 283 and three touchdowns and one interception. And most of those, the majority of those targets to Larry Fitzgerald, who continues to just defy Father Time with a double-digit reception day, 10 catches, 138 yards and a touchdown. The other big story on this game on the other side of the ball for Tampa, their quarterback only saw 10 attempts before he left early with a shoulder injury. Jameis Winston is going to be having an MRI later today. We should hear what's going on with that shoulder here shortly. It was his throwing shoulder. So Ryan Fitzpatrick, a.k.a. Fitzmagic, who's always a serviceable backup, comes in the game, and he almost got to 300 yards. He did throw a couple picks, but also had three touchdowns, most of that coming late in the fourth quarter. Cameron Brate, the recipient of one of those touchdowns, who just has four games now in a row with scoring a touchdown. So very impressive. Cameron Brate still finding ways to get it done in the red zone on a 10-yard strike. And Mike Evans, for the most part, being held in check. Both him and DeSean Jackson both scored a touchdown, but both of them only had three catches on the day. We saw a 37-yarder from Fitzpatrick to Evans under the coverage of Justin Bethel, but that's pretty much the roadmap to beating the Cardinals secondary nowadays, is just find out who's being covered by Justin Bethel and pretty much attacking him. And therefore surprised that Jackson didn't have a bigger game, but it is what it is. And both of these teams move on. Tampa now moves down to 2-3. Of course, they had week one off due to the hurricane and having to have their game played against Miami in week 11 now. But Arizona moves to 500. They are at 3-3 on the year. And I wanted to also remind you to take this time to let you know, if you are a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan and you are listening, we do not have a Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan at this time. And feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at NFU Podcast, and also drop us a line at nextfanup.wordpress.com. We would love to hear from you and get a Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan into the fold. That being said, that is going to wrap up that game and the 4 o'clock games here, and we will move it along.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, back to talk about the Cleveland Browns versus the Houston Texans. I'll be honest, if you are a football fan, I really hope you're paying attention to this game. Any Houston Texans game has become must-watch football, and it's all because of Deshaun Watson. Threw for 225 yards, three more touchdowns, so he's the first rookie in NFL history with at least three touchdown passes in three straight games. He's now thrown 15 touchdown passes in his six games. Guess what? That's how many that Brock Osweiler threw in all of last year. this kid looks like he could be the real deal. And we've been saying for years that with this Houston defense, if you had a quarterback, they could make some noise. Well, watch out. They're starting to make some noise. On the other side, Cleveland continues to just seem to botch the quarterback position. If you want to hear Ben's thoughts, refer back to some of our previous podcasts, Ben being our Cleveland Browns super fan. They were playing the rookie DeShone Kizer. They benched him this week for Kevin Hogan, who, let's be honest, was kind of a disaster. Threw for something like 140 yards, interception, had a bad grounding penalty. If you're going to put in a young guy, you need to give him the security to know that he can make more than one mistake without getting yanked. I mean, I remember when, you know, not to make this Seahawks today, but when Russell Wilson started off, he had a rough couple of games starting off in the NFL, and some people locally were saying they should bench him, but, you know, you stick with the guy. You when you start a rookie, you assume he's going to have some struggles. I mean, there's a reason why the best quarterbacks in college aren't automatically the best quarterbacks in the NFL. There's a lot to learn, and especially when you're on a roster that's a little bereft of talent like the Cleveland Browns are. So, honestly, I hate the way they're handling that position. If you're going to have DeShone Kizer on the bench, leave him there all year. If you're going to have him go in there as the quarterback and learn on the job, you got to let him do that all year, barring injury. So a little frustrated on that standpoint, and I'm sure Cleveland Browns fans are frustrated as well. They fall to 0-6. They've lost something like 16 straight road games. Meanwhile, Houston Texans at 3-3, tied, I believe, for the top of their division lead, and all of a sudden looks like they have a quarterback. Things are looking up in Houston. All right, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Really big thank you to everybody who hosted, especially Josh, a Lions superfan, who really stepped up. Definitely appreciate that. Want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. If you like this show, and if you're listening this late in the show, I'm going to assume you do, either that or you fell asleep, go ahead and spread the word, like us, share us, leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. That helps us get exposure, especially good reviews, things like that. Check out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. We post our previews, reviews, commentary, things like that on there. Perspective from fans of 32 NFL franchises. You can follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can also email us if you have questions, things you want us to cover, things you want us to talk about on the show. We're always happy to interact. That email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.